Hi, everybody. This is Tony Robbins. Happy holiday and happy the end of year 2001. Listen, I wanted to have this coaching call with you today and do questions and answers, but I also thought that maybe to assist you in creating some momentum at the end of the year, I might share with you briefly, first, a process that I've done with myself for about the last 10 years. And it's a process of how to really capture the best out of each of my years and develop momentum to set up the next year so that it's even stronger. And as I've done that over the last decade or so, I've had the experience of certainly having challenges each year, things you can't predict, but I've also had a level of both fulfillment and accomplishment that's been much greater than I had previously in my life. And it's because I had a plan, a direction for my life, and because I was able also not to allow the challenging times to overwhelm me. You know, this is the natural time of year, at least in a few weeks, when most people, especially Americans, but I know it's been around the world, and I want to acknowledge and thank all my friends that are here. I know we have people here from the Far East and Singapore and China and Taiwan, and we also have people here from, of course, all of Europe. We have Germany, Italy, Japan, England, I say Japan for the Asian group that we left out, and, of course, all the people from the U.S. So we have people from all over the world here. Americans are most noted for this, but I think we all make the mistake that most of us set goals and decide what we want to do for our lives, usually around New Year's. And the challenge is we go into making New Year's resolutions, and I know in the U.S. at least, the statistics show that 98% of all people that set a New Year's resolution will not actually live it or complete it. And the reason is because we're using something artificial, namely just a calendar change, to give some magical reason to suddenly go do something, but we're not really necessarily committed to it. We're doing it because we think it's a good time or we're encouraged to do so, or we start thinking about our lives. And what I believe about this is simple. I think that why not take advantage of the psychological trick that makes most of us focus on our lives called a calendar change? And I tell people, look at it this way, new year, new life. But to make that idea into something that's real, you really got to capture the best out of what you've got going. So in order to create momentum for your new year, in order for you to enjoy the best parts of this year and learn from this year, I'd like to first share with you, if I may, seven really simple, fundamental steps that can really help you to maximize the quality of your life out of this year and entering the next. So if you got a pen or paper, if you want to type online there, if you got a space for some journal notes, I'd encourage you to grab these, if you would, real quick to make this happen. And also, afterwards, I'll make a document available to you online that you can download, but I capture this along the way, if you would. Here are the steps at the most simple level. You know, years ago, I made a distinction that was very helpful for me, before I give you the steps, and that is that I found myself in a position where I put myself in a place where I had an experience that was extremely painful. And it had to do with a business relationship with someone I'd been in a relationship with for a long time, and I felt like I'd done a great job in supporting this person, and they had operated in a way that lacked integrity. And as a result, since I trusted them, and I didn't have, you know, any downside protection, I put myself in a position where I was going to have a significant amount of pain from someone I'd helped a lot. And I was very, very hurt by it, and as a result, feeling very frustrated and very angry, frankly. And I knew I was going to have to probably go through a lawsuit. I was going to sue this person and go through all kinds of challenges that just seemed unfair. And the same day I found this out, I was traveling at the time to actually conduct a Date with Destiny program in Laguna Beach, California. And I live in San Diego, and I have this magnificent drive along the coast that I got to take, but I didn't see the drive. I didn't notice I was in my convertible car with the sunshine in my face and the air going by. I didn't notice anything. All I was focused on was this thing that was so upsetting to me. And by the time I got to the event, frankly, with all my skills, I knew I could change my state. I knew I could change my physiology and so forth, but I didn't want to. I don't know if you've ever had that experience where someone would say, well, you've been to Tony Robbins, and why don't you just change your state? You say, I'll tell you what, I'm going to change your state if you ever say that to me again. But the point of the matter is, I was so immersed in the frustration, I didn't want to change. But I needed to. Here I was at this event. So I began to realize that the reason I didn't want to change is for about an hour and 20 minutes of my drive, over and over again, I've been asking myself bad questions. I've gone through my head and thought, how could he possibly do this? How does he think he'd get by with this? How come somebody else didn't stop him before this? Why didn't I anticipate this? And I went around and around with questions that were just upsetting me, and it caused me to continually stack or flood myself with negative emotions, emotions of frustration, of overwhelm, of anger, of hurt, of sadness, etc. Well, whenever you overreact to someone, whenever you snap at a child, if you've ever done that to your kids unfairly, or an associate or member of family, you're not usually reacting to that moment. What you're reacting to is that it's happened again, you know, for the third time, the fifth time. That's what makes people get upset and overreact. But when I got there, I began to realize, well, look, I've been stacking. I've been flooding myself with this negative emotion so I don't feel like changing. But I must. I need to change my focus, and I need to flood myself with positive emotion. I need to find everything I can possibly find that's great in my life, because what's happened is whatever we focus on, we feel. And we are interesting as human beings. We don't focus on 20 things at once in reality. Whatever we focus on, we feel, and when we're upset, we focus on that, and we lose an appreciation of the rest of our lives. Well, if that can happen in a moment, you can imagine what happens in a month or a year of somebody's life. So what I did that day is I sat down, and for literally just 15 minutes, I said, I'm going to flood myself with nothing but positive emotion. And the way I'm going to do it, because I'm going to think of every magical moment that I possibly can think of that has happened in the last 5 or 10 years of my life randomly. That is anything that's good that's happened. Because if I do that and I don't put any, you know, limits on it, I can think of anything at any stage of my life, what will happen is I won't navigate it. I'll just experience it. And what I'm going to do is imagine remembering any magical moment, and I would imagine physically bringing it to my body, breathing it, feeling it, being there just for a moment and experiencing that joy. Well, I did this for 15 minutes. I made myself first do it slowly. I thought of moments like moments that made me really happy, moments that were really loving, moments that were really exciting, moments of adventure, moments of accomplishment. And then gradually I sped it up to literally the momentum of it was so much that I was just flashing on any memory as fast as I could and just getting the core feeling. So I literally was overwhelmed with positive emotion. The beauty of this was I didn't just feel good for this moment. I didn't just let go of this singular upset. But more importantly, for the next 5 days, I felt like I was walking around on an emotional high, and I couldn't figure out why. Well, the reason why is I had stacked or flooded myself with such positive emotion. I bring this up to you not just to teach you what I call an emotional flood or give you the idea of how it works, but rather to tell you that after a year like, you know, when a 911 happened in New York, and where terrorism has been a concern for so many people, where stock markets for many people have been times instead of great victories for many people, there have been many challenges and many losses, where many people have become unemployed, and where all of us have dealt with the challenges that naturally show up in a given year, where either family members have gotten ill or possibly died, or there have been massive changes, let's say, in our personal lives, it's critically important that you build on success. What I really believe in life is you can't build on failure, you can only build on success. And if you start to enter the next year with a legacy from the year 2001 that is extremely painful, and that's your primary legacy, it'll keep you from having an excitement about your year, and more importantly, it'll keep you from maximizing your ability. So the first step of the 7 steps to have an outstanding 2002, to create an outstanding new year, to have a new year be a new life, is to first get clear about what happened in 2001. What really happened? And when I say what happened is, I mean first, what happened that was great in your life? What did you love? What was exciting? What was magical? What was beautiful in your life? What happened this year that you'll treasure as long as you live if you just remember it and think about it? And there may have been all kinds of challenges, but you deliberately set those aside for the moment. You say, what happened this year that made me feel extraordinary? And you start with anything that pops in your mind, and you're going to write this. Now, the tendency, I'm sure, for many of you is like, okay, let's get to the questions and answers, and who cares about this? Or I know about the idea of an emotional flood, and I'll do this stuff later. No. The hardest step to getting anything going is that first step. If you're going to get momentum, the way you get a momentum in your life is to first build on what's working and have an emotional feeling about it. So what I would encourage you to do is when I'm done speaking today and once we're done with the questions and answers is to immediately get out a piece of paper and pencil or do the download of at least these 7 steps if you didn't write it down, and physically right then and there, while we've talked about it, think about your year. Now, you can always add to this later on. You say, I'll do this a few days before Christmas or after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's. If you get started, you'll enjoy it because this is what you live for. You live for the emotions that make life so worthwhile. So for my own self, for example, if I was doing this right now, which I'm going to do later on here, I'd start out and I'd say, okay, what was really magical? What did I love? What were moments that were magical to me? What were extraordinary accomplishments? What was fun? So I'd say one of the greatest experiences of my year was I decided to get engaged this year, and the organization of how I did that and the creativity I put in it and the look on Sage's face when she was completely, totally surprised that these people stepped in and remember singing to her. It was a magical event. Another magical event was my marriage this year, which happened the same year, which originally wasn't planning. It was spontaneous, and it was intimate. It was beautiful. And I remember the details of that. Or I remember my daughter this year got a job on West Wing, and she was so excited what happened to her as an actress, all the new opportunities that opened up for her. Or my boy, who's now signing up to go to college and his football games this year, and a key moment I had with him, for example, a moment in our jacuzzi in Fiji where all these young kids came and piled in with all of us, and we laughed our tails off and sung these Fijian songs. But you write down all of these things, little things, big things, anything at all that you would treasure. I got a chance to make a movie this year, and I remember the best part of the movie was the opening night, the official night in Hollywood, and I got my mom got to come, and how excited she was, you know, and this is like movie star stuff for her, which to me was silly, but it was so beautiful. And seeing her light up and having her be so proud and feeling like I got to treat her like a queen and the happiness she had that day. So these are not just moments about yourself. They're moments you got to share with other people. They can be anything, anything you accomplished this year. What did you achieve this year that you're proud of? You know, I went through a company that I had that was a dot-com company, and I watched all these other dot-coms go down. Friends of mine who had very big companies, their dot-coms went down, and some very famous celebrities, you know, who had, like, MVP.com. Or you've got guys like Gretzky who are, you know, just great people. People, you know, like Michael Jordan who had a close-up shop or ABC or Disney. And that this year I figured out how to turn that company around and merge it into another company. And the stock, as a result now, for those you're not aware of it, for Dream Life, it's become a new company, and the stock is up 300% of what it was when I joined the company. So the ability to turn things around, anything you've accomplished, anything you've achieved, anything you've enjoyed, just go on a rant of writing as fast as you can, and then once you're done writing it, you got to stop and think of each one and feel it as if you were there right now, and then at the end, speed the process up. I can rant and rave about this forever. I can tell you about it verbally. It may sound trivial, but it's unbelievably powerful. So what did you have in 2001? What were the magic moments? What was extraordinary? What did you accomplish in 2001? What are some of the things that you really want to duplicate in 2002? Because some of the things that you experienced this year, you're going to want to make happen again. That's all part of getting clear, part A. Part B, get clear about what you hated out of this year. And there's a lot of things that happened probably in your year that you didn't appreciate, that you didn't enjoy. What was really challenging about 2001 for you? I mean, really think about it. There's some things that most of us here in America certainly shared in terms of the impact that's happened to our country as a result of terrorism that, frankly, lots of countries have experienced for years. But what was the impact of that? And there are things that not only we shared as a culture, but you may have shared individually. I know in my own case, I have some very close family members and friends that were lost this year, and their deaths and the impact that it had upon us. And the question was not only what happened that you didn't enjoy, what was a challenge for this year, but how can you use that in your future? How can you take the challenge and turn it into something that is valuable for your future? What lessons can you learn? You know, as a result of some of those experiences and deaths, you look at life differently. You may look at your time differently. You may say, you know, I want to spend more time with my family. Again, one of the great things that happened for many Americans as a result of this event is even those who aren't personally directly affected begin to say, you know what? What do I value most? So when you look at your life and you look at your year, you got to look at what you didn't enjoy, what was frustrating, what was challenging, what do you not want to repeat again? They might say, well, Tony, that's wonderful. I don't want to repeat a terrorist attack. You can't control that, but the things you can control. What are the elements you can control? And the things you can't control, if they were to happen again, how would you handle them differently? If things like that were to happen next year, what meaning would you give to them so they didn't overwhelm you? Who would you help? Who would you coach? Who would you seek out as a friend? How would you deal with it differently? Because the whole entire lifestyle of a human being is shaped by the way they evaluate their lives. Most people work hard all day long. They make it through the day. They fight through the challenges, the victories, etc. And they come home and they're so exhausted that what they do is they get on the web to do something that makes their brain disappear. Or they turn on the TV set, or they have a bite to eat, and then they go to bed, they wake up and start the same thing all over. That is a recipe for disaster, frustration, and a life that is extremely unhappy. If that's what people do in a day, you can only imagine again what they do in a year. If you don't take the time to suck the juice out of this year, to figure out what you love that you want to duplicate, to stack all the victories so that you have momentum going the next year, and to learn from the challenges, then you're doomed to duplicate the problems again and probably not experience the joys, because we tend to focus on what gave us pain quicker than we did on what gives us pleasure. Third part of getting clear. What decisions did you make this year? What decisions did you make that you're really proud of? What are some decisions? Maybe there are tough decisions. Maybe there are little decisions. But what are some of the most important decisions you made this year that made your life better or will make your life better in the future? Maybe you made some decisions about changing your diet. Write those down and acknowledge that victory and recommit to it on a higher level. Maybe it's a decision you made to change your relationship or change your career. Maybe it's a decision you made about changing some standards for yourself. Maybe it's to stop smoking. But what are some decisions you made and you kept that you're proud of? New ways of operating in your life. And the second thing is, what are some decisions that you might want to make next year? Because if you think about it, part of getting clear is not just getting clear about what came out of this year, but what do you want to duplicate, what do you want to learn from this, what do you want to invest into your following year? That's all part of step one, which is get clear. Because I want to get to your questions, I'll do the rest really quick. Step number two, you've got to get certain. Once you're clear about your year, you know what you love, what you hated, what excited you, what great decisions you made, what bad decisions, what you want to duplicate this year, what you want to pull from it, and you've got the juice from it, you've got to get certain that you can make 2002 the best year ever. You're not going to have a new life unless you're certain you can shape it. And events like 2001, you know, when you have a terrorist attack or you have a loss of a job or you have a loss of a relationship or some dream you had does not come about, all this produces uncertainty in people. And when you have uncertainty, you do not maximize your core abilities as a human being. So you've got to regain the certainty. And the way to regain certainty in the middle of uncertainty is to reach back into your past. I'll tell you why. Everything you've ever wanted to have happen in your future, any goal, any desire you have, you want to make a certain amount of money, you want to find your ideal relationship, you want to get your kids through high school or college, you want to have a child, you want to transform your body, you want to get closer to God, you want to make a difference in the world, whatever it is you really want to do, you only want to do that so you can have a certain feeling. You want to make all that money or you want to change the world for what reason? So you can feel love, so you can feel like you've accomplished, so you can feel like you made a difference, so you can feel like your life has a purpose, so you have fun. Whatever feelings you want to have in the future, you've already had. That's why I want you to capture them out of this year or any point in your life. Any emotion you ever want to have in the future, you've already had. But most of us are rushing to the future without capturing what's here. Well, similarly, if you want to get certain, go to your past. And here's what I mean by that. What I'd ask you to do when you stop and you get to this step two is I want you to write down every single thing that you can think of that's in your life today that was once a dream, a desire, or a goal. See, much of what's in our life today at one time seemed difficult or impossible, and here it is. But we forget this. We're such creatures of the moment. We tend to focus on the moment. If the moment's frustrating, we tend to live there. We tend to forget, and we also are creatures of pain. We remember the painful memories of the past, but we forget the pleasurable ones. You have to discipline yourself. So here's my question to you. What is in your life today that was once a dream, a goal, or desire, or frankly, at one time, seemed virtually impossible? Because the way to get certain is to make this list of items that are in your life today. Maybe it's something simple like, you know, a certain job that you have now that once was a goal. Maybe it's a relationship. You dreamed of being in a relationship with somebody like this, and now you take for granted. You come home and say, hi, well, there was a point in your life where you're thinking, my God, would I ever get them to go out with me, go out to dinner with me? Would we ever have the pleasure of truly being intimate? But now they're with you all the time, so you take it for granted. The law of familiarity causes us to lose certainty because we forget that what is now familiar was once uncertain. And if you can recapture that, it will give you power and certainty to take into the design of your new year and your new life. So again, what you're going to do is write down everything in your life that was once a goal, once a desire, once seemed impossible. And then what I like to do in step two is circle three of those items. And by the way, when you do it, write down little things, write down big things. Write down a car you thought you'd want to have, and maybe you take it for granted, and at one point seemed difficult, or a job, or a relationship, or a mastery of a skill, whether it's snowboarding or something you can do on the computer. Write little things, write big things. But then step two, circle three things that seemed difficult or impossible at one time, the most difficult or most impossible. What are three that really, truly, out of that whole list, seems so difficult or impossible? And then step three, write a paragraph under each one of those three about how you turn that dream into reality. In other words, what did you do? What you'll notice if you do this, if you take all three and you say, okay, what was the first thing I did? Is the first step is you probably got obsessed. When I say obsessed, I mean that in the most positive sense of the word. I mean you got so focused on wanting this, on making this thing happen, that you were willing to do almost anything to make it happen. You were totally focused. I don't know about you, but I've had so many experiences in my life where there's something that didn't even matter to me, and then all of a sudden I got excited one day, and I got so focused on it that I couldn't stop thinking about it. I thought about it daytime, nighttime, and just the focus alone causes that part of your brain, the reticular activating system, the part of your brain that causes you to notice things or to ignore things, to see anything that relates towards its achievement. So write down, what'd you do? I got obsessed. I talked to somebody about it. I wrote it down. I went out and started interviewing people. I modeled somebody. I got energy from it. Just do your best to figure out what you did, the steps you went through to turn that dream into reality, and you'll begin to see a pattern, and that pattern will show you how to turn anything that right now seems impossible into a reality as well. So get clear, step one. Step two, get certain. Here's step three. Get excited. Listen, there is no way on earth you're going to create an extraordinary new life unless you tap into the power of enthusiasm. I know this sounds like positive damn thinking, and you know how I feel about that. I don't believe in positive thinking. I don't think you should go to the garden and jump up and down and, you know, say there's no weeds, there's no weeds, there's no weeds. But I also believe you can't sit around and focus on everything that's difficult or impossible and allow your energy to drop. Excitement is energy, and energy is how you take something that's invisible and turn it into visible. The only way that's going to happen is if you get the certainty and then the energy to follow through. And excitement is energy. The way to get excited is you're going to have to think bigger. So here's what I suggest you do. Number one, get yourself in a peak state, and all of you listening know how to do that. A massive change, a radical change in your physiology. Step up, make an explosive breath, scream yes, do whatever it takes. You have so many ways to do this, having been a part of Master University. Then what I want you to do is what I have people do in Day with Destiny. I want you to take 10 minutes, and I want you to write as fast as you can. Put some music on the background if you want. What's everything you'd like to accomplish, not just in 2002, because that starts to limit your thinking, but everything you'd like to accomplish in the next 10 years. Anything you can think of, anything you like to see, anything you like to do, earn, master, own, create, be able to give to other people. You can write thing goals. You can write money goals. You can write goals of contribution, goals of spirituality, goals for your body, goals for your business. The secret is not to think and write, but to write as fast as you can move the pen. Because if you'll do this, and especially if you do it in a peak state where there are no limits, you're not saying, oh, can I do that or not? But you're thinking of all kinds of areas, your personal development goals, your financial goals, you know, things for your body, anything. If you do it like crazy, there's going to be an energy that will be released within you, especially if you've done it after the first two steps. In other words, if you've captured all the good things out of this year and you realize there's so much good in spite of some of the challenges and you're certain about your ability to turn the invisible into visible, now when you go to write some goals, you're going to feel certain they can be achieved. Now, step four is you've got to get focused. And what that means is now you've done this great thing of energy. You're clear about the past. You're certain about your ability to turn the visible and the invisible. You're excited about your ability to generate all these wonderful things. Now you got to get specific. So under getting focused, what you're going to do is circle your top 4 one-year goals. What do you want most out of all this? If all the things on your list were here, you were going to pick the ones that were most important to you and say these are the top 4. If you achieve nothing else but these 4 in 2002, which 4 would juice you the most? Which would get you up early? Which would keep you up late? What would excite you to the highest level and keep you excited and, most importantly, keep you focused? Because there's so many things competing for our attention, and if you have too many goals, you're not going to make progress. What are going to be your top 4 for the year? Step 5, get committed. Get committed means now that you know your top 4 goals, you got to turn them from shoulds into what? Absolute must. You know as well as I do. And what makes something move from a should from a must to a must is enough reasons. As I always say, reasons come first, answers come second. If you get strong enough reasons to do anything, then you can find a way to do it. A big enough why, and you'll figure out how to do it. So you've got to write a paragraph under each of these top 4 one-year goals. Why is it a must for you to achieve within the next 12 months? You may achieve it less, but within the next 12 months. What will it give you? What will you give your family, your friends? What will you be able to contribute? What will you be able to enjoy? If you didn't do it, what would it cost you? Why is it a must for you? And one way you can go about this is a tool that a friend of mine shared with me many, many, many years ago when I was very young. And it was a lady who said, you know, that how she got herself to do things very often is she did what she called her rocking chair test. And I actually talked about this in one of my very first tape sets. The rocking chair test is the idea that you think about your goals and you start to say, okay, if I never did this and I was 80 years old in my rocking chair, how would I feel? And the first time I used this was learning to fly, for example, a helicopter, because at the time I didn't have the money to do it. I certainly didn't have the time to learn to fly a helicopter, but I really wanted it. And I thought, well, I want it, that's a should. I have to have it, it's a total must, that's what I got to get it to. So I thought, okay, well, if I was 80 years old, I'm in my rocking chair, and I'm looking back on my life, and I never learned to fly, how would I feel? And I thought, my God, to have missed that many years of the freedom of picking friends up, a family up, to be able to go in the sky in a helicopter and just freeze right there and look down on anything, to dive down on the ocean where, you know, whales are below me, and to dance through the sky, to have missed that 40, 50, 60, 70 years, that's insane. I mean, I really got emotionally associated. There are other things I thought, if I never did it, would I really care? The answer is, no, I don't. So the rocking chair test is another way you can get yourself more associated to, are you willing to pay the price to make this dream a reality? Because so often in life, people have this dream, but they don't make it real. And I'll tell you how you make it real, and this is another action under getting committed. Once you write down why it's a must, let's say you've done the rocking chair test, you feel emotionally associated. Here's how you make it really turn into reality and make it committed. You write down everything that you may have to do. I repeat, not that you want to do, not that you have to do, but everything you might have to do in order to achieve what you want. Now, if you make a list of all things you might have to do to achieve what you want, you're not going to like this list. I can promise you, because you might say, well, I might have to stay up an extra 2 hours a night. I might have to give up, you know, drinking X nights a week. I might have to. And along the way, you're going to come up with things, I guarantee you, that you're afraid of. The reason people never really commit to achieve something is because in the back of their head, they know there are things they might have to do they don't want to do. So what they do is they set down the goal, they get all excited, they tell themselves about it, maybe they tell friends about it, maybe they even post it on the wall, but then they never take action because of their fears. The best way to deal with this is to get committed, is not only come up with the reasons why it's a must so you're motivated to do it, and not only get associated to it, but to look the tiger in the eye. Make a list of everything you might have to do to achieve what you want, and here's what you do. You go one by one, and you look at each item, and you say, wow, in order to achieve what I want, I might not have to do this, but if I had to do this, can I look myself in the eye and say I'd be willing to do it if it was absolutely necessary? If you, at the gut level, can look at each one of those items and say, I may not like it, I may not want to do it, but I'd be willing to do that to achieve this if it was necessary, and you can honestly do that in your gut, I'll tell you what happens. When you face the tiger in the eye, 99% of what you write down, you'll never have to do. But the fact that you faced it releases energy in your body. It releases that unconscious level of fear that would keep you from taking action. And all of a sudden, you're going to find yourself taking action. Because it's never as bad as we imagine. Our fears, especially our unconscious fears, the ones you're not even aware of that are keeping you from taking action, get them the heck out of your head. And the way to get them out of your head is just write them. And as you write them down, some of these you write down, you might think, oh, that'll never happen. Say, okay, it'll never happen, but I'm going to write it down anyway. Just getting that out of your head and looking at it, looking the tiger in the eye, will free you up and will truly get you committed. Finishing up the last couple ones, number 6, you've got to get momentum now. Okay, let's look at what we got. You're really clear. You pulled all this emotional juice out of 2001, all the good stuff. You figure out the bad stuff, which will also tell you what you don't want to do. You looked at the good decisions, the tough decisions, decisions you want to make. That'll get you to really pull the juice out. It'll give you understanding. It'll give you learning. It'll give you lessons. It'll give you juice. Now, you got yourself certain. Step 2, you've written down everything. Once was a dream, now it's a reality. You've circled your top 3. You've figured out what you did to make those dreams into reality. And just doing that will remind you, man, things that once were impossible or impossible are now in my life. So things that seem impossible today, I can make possible. Step 3, you've gotten yourself excited. You know, you're in that peak state. You've written down everything you want to achieve in the next 10 years, anything you want to give, anything you want to share, learn, master, etc., and you're juiced about it with beyond a shadow of a doubt. You really, really have the emotion for it. Step 4, you got yourself focused. You know your top 4 goals, and you know exactly what's most important to you about those goals because you've gone to step 5 and you've gotten yourself committed. You've written a paragraph under each of those top 4 one-year goals that you know if you achieve them within a year, it was an outstanding year, and these reasons move you. They're a must for you. Maybe you've done the rocking chair test, you've made your list and said, I'm willing to commit to whatever it takes. Step 6 to keep that momentum going is you've got to take some immediate action. And there are 2 actions. When I take people through Unleash the Power Within, I walk them through the process of momentum, and I always have them do 2 things. I say, number 1, what's a little action you could take that'll commit you? What's an email you can send that will commit you to the decision you've made here, the thing you've committed to? What's a meeting you can set up right now? You can get on the phone and book it with somebody. What's a letter that you could send to somebody? What's a class you can enroll yourself in that by immediately calling tonight or tomorrow morning and enrolling you, it makes it real? Because one of the most important principles that I teach in getting people to turn dreams into reality, one of the most important principles we teach in RPM planning and how to get yourself to produce greater results and greater fulfillment in a shorter period of time, is that if you talk about something, it's a dream. If you envision it, you're going to be excited, which is what you'll be at this point if you do these steps I'm telling you about. If you get a plan for it, it's possible. But when you schedule it, it's real. And the way to get yourself to make something real is schedule it. You've got to get momentum. So what are two action steps you can take? What's something you can take tonight or tomorrow morning immediately, a little step, that once you've committed to these four goals, it'll move you forward on them? And then step two, what is a big step that'll commit you? So I often use a humorous example that I love because that's things I've done in my real life. You know, one of the things I did when I was overweight was I was so frustrated with myself, and I'd always say, I'm going to go on a diet, I'm going to change, I'm going to do this, and I never really followed through. So I said, okay, here's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to call somebody who I know hates my guts. I'm going to let them know that I'm going to lose this much weight, and I'm going to publicly put that out to a whole series of people, but I tell it to two or three people that I know would love to humiliate the heck out of me. You know, one year I even made a deal with a guy that we would both, whoever gave up on the diet first would eat a can of dog food, and then there's no way the guy at Dick would let me off the hook or I let him off the hook because we'd have too much pleasure making the other person do it. I mean, that's called getting committed, and that'll get you some momentum. But the other thing that I did, step two, was I did something physical immediately myself, something bigger. And what I did is I went through my entire kitchen, as dumb as it sounds, and I tore out every damn thing that had accumulated in there or I'd put in there recently that was keeping me overweight. Anything that I didn't want to have access to. And I went and I took it and put it in the toilet and I played the music of We Are the Champions of the World. And I stood above it and made all these power moves, right? And it was so silly and so dumb, I couldn't stop laughing, but it gave me a sense of power over it. Another thing I did is I got rid of all my clothes, to give you a perspective, everything that I would not be able to fit after those 30 days. I kept a minimum amount of clothes that I could survive with during that time. Those were big actions that not only had committed me more, but they gave me such momentum that there was no looking back. So come up with two action steps, a simple one that you can do tonight or tomorrow morning, immediately. That's also why when I'm done here, I really want to challenge you and encourage you and invite you, my friends, to immediately take action on these seven steps. Don't say, okay, I'll download it and I'll do it on Thursday. Do it tonight. You've already committed the time here. Even if you think you're busy or it's late, there's no moment like the present. Or at least start it. Start finding the things out of this year that are magical. Do 5 minutes of it. Do 5 minutes of certainty about what it is that you've done in the past. Do 5 minutes of things you want to get excited about. 5 minutes towards getting focused. There is nothing like the present. One of the greatest lessons I learned early in my career was never leave the sight of setting a goal without doing something towards its attainment, because it's so easy to get distracted. So that's why I'm taking the time to do this and not just doing questions and answers with you, because you got a chance for a brand new year, brand new life. This is the perfect timing to do it, but you got to get momentum. Step seven, the final one, is get smart. Get smart means you got to measure yourself. The reason people never meet their resolutions is, number one, they never really get clear about what they want. They don't really look at things in depth. They think about what are the obvious things I probably should deal with. They never make it a must. They never truly resolve. They just come up with some goals that are their preferences. And the most important reason they fail is they don't measure. If you're going to achieve something, you've got to measure it. In any company, anybody I coach, and as many of you know, I get paid $1 million a year to coach somebody, the way I go and coach that person is, the more you measure something, the better it's going to get. See, if you do, you know, set your New Year's goals, and we've all talked about this before, when do people check in and see how they're doing? Next New Year's. And when you do it next New Year's, guess what? There's no chance for your succeeding. If you checked in once a month, you got 12 times to see if you're on course or not and to correct your course, because you have to face it and see reality. If you do it twice a month, I promise you, you'll get the result. Often in a business, if you want to make your business better, find the areas of the business that aren't working. It's because you're not managing it. You can't manage something that you don't measure. It's impossible. So the more you measure it, there are some cases in individuals' lives or businesses' lives where I want to turn around with people, where I'll measure them once a week, Some places I'll measure them once a day. Some places I'll start measuring them several times a day to get the momentum of training a person or that organization to produce the results they need to produce. So in order to measure, though, you got to set specific measurable goals, and you got to see how are you doing in that area. You can't just have general things like, I'll be in better health at the end of this next year. You know, say I'm going to lose 21 pounds, or I'm going to lose X amount percentage of body fat, and you got to have ways of measuring it on a regular basis to make it better. And the other thing I can tell you about that is get a coach. And we certainly have those. That can be a commercial, but it's also true. If you get a coach, you're going to get results, because a coach is somebody outside yourself. I don't mean people around you who can buy into your story, because we all have friends, and our friends can never really truly be our most effective coaches, because if they get in our face about something, we start to pick on them and go, well, I know you're not doing that yourself, or you're not this great in this other area. We need an outside source of someone we respect, someone who's a professional, and someone who will schedule things with us that are within our own life schedule to meet our own needs and be focused. Now, friends can be an additional way of doing this. But I'll give you an example. I was on The View one time, and I was talking about various ways to create change. And afterwards, several of the hosts came up to me, and they said, my God, these are the answers we need. We know we need to do this to change our lives. And they said, we never seem to follow through, though. We all get together and, like, for example, commit we're going to exercise, and we do it for a few weeks, and then we stop. And I said, well, ladies, I said, I got to tell you, this is not hard to figure out why. Look at the three of you. I said, I'm not being disrespectful, but none of you are fit. So how could you possibly get all of you to follow through when all three of you are the coaches for each other? You've got to get somebody who's already produced the results, whose lifestyle is already getting those results. You can't coach each other, because you'll buy in each other's stories eventually. You'll comfort each other eventually. You need somebody else who's produced the result. If they produce the result, then they're not going to buy into that theory. And more importantly, they can lead by example, because they can tell you ways they got around some of the same rationalization, some of the same problems, some of the same time management challenges, etc. And that's what you need as well. Get a coach. If it's not with us, get it somewhere. Don't make it a friend. Make your friend your friend that you do it with. Make them your teammate. But find a coach on the outside. And again, we can have those. If you want a commercial, you want a resource, call us and we can get you the coaching that comes with that process. So again, go through these 7 steps immediately, and you'll create a momentum that will create 2002 to be your best year ever. I'll say them one last time, because I know not all of you are taking notes. 1, get clear. Really suck the juice out of this year. What did you love out of this year? What was magical? What did you achieve? What were little magic moments with your children or with your spouse or your loved ones, your best friends? Think of little stuff that you're going to forget otherwise, and write for at least 10 or 15 minutes everything you can think about, and then emotionally associate. Stop and remember them. Feel like you're stepping in your body back in the moment. See it, feel it, own it, so that you stack and flood yourself with that positive emotion from the year and because you've captured it. Secondly, what did you hate out of the year that you don't want to go through again? What did you learn from this year? What good decisions you make, what bad decisions, what did you learn, what new decisions you want to make next year? Step 2, get certain, write everything. Everything you think of for 5-10 minutes that was wonderful in your life, that was once a dream but is in your life today. And it'll really get you, frankly, to appreciate these things more. It just won't make you more certain. Circle your top 3, figure out what you did, and you got to plan to turn anything else that seems impossible into possibility as well. Step 3, get excited. Get in a peak state. Write down anything you want to achieve, give, do, create in the next 10 years. Step 4, get focused. Circle your top 4 one-year goals. Make sure they're things that are truly achievable. Step 5, get committed. Write your paragraph for each of those top 4 one-year goals so you're associated with why it's a must for you. Write everything down you might have to do. Face the monster. Hug the monster, if you would. Face the tiger in the eye. Say, I'm willing to do it, and you'll get momentum by going to step 6. Take some immediate action, something you do tonight or tomorrow, little thing, and then a big thing you're going to do that commits you immediately within the next few days. Step 7, get smart. Set up a schedule of measuring yourself. Ideally, get a coach. That's my massive download in 31-2 minutes. I'm looking down here to try and give you something of enormous value that is simple that you can do immediately. Now, you've got to do your part, which is it's great to know what to do, or you can say, oh, this is so damn simple, I'll do it later. It's another thing to do it. The only difference in people's lives is not what they know. Everybody knows things. It's so easy to be a critic. I try to take the most complex things and make them simple enough that we actually do them. If you do this, I can promise you a completely different impact in the quality of your life next year. No matter how good this year was, it'll be an even better year, and you'll know what you're after. So those are my comments for now. Let's go to questions and answers for the next 20 minutes or so that we have together. And they're feeding me these, I guess, through the stream pipe. And the first question is, my husband and I have been married for 5 years, but we've fallen into a rut. How can we get the passion back into our relationship? How powerful question. I could do the entire session on relationships, and I think we ought to, frankly, do a session on that anyway. Those of you here who've been to Master University, especially Life Mastery this year, know that all of us have gone through the experiences of having relationships that we were in for a period of time where they may have started out great and didn't last. Most people make the mistake of believing that it's based on time. Like everyone will say to you, oh, it's 5 years or 3 years, it's a seven-year itch, or after 12 years. And I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's false. That what causes people to get in a rut is that they have a way of living their life where they've lost what's called polarity. Polarity means the two of you now are in a position where you both have made your life about making a living, about your kids, about the business, about all the other things that are important in your life, and maybe you've even worked as a team. Maybe you're even best friends, but you don't have any sexual energy. You don't have any passion between each other. Passion comes from polarity. Let me say it to you this way, as simply as I can, as briefly as I can. Think of it this way. What makes a relationship work is different than what makes a relationship passionate. I had a relationship, I was married for 13 years to Becky, and I made that relationship work, and, you know, she did not want a divorce, and I did want a divorce, even though I made it work. You can make any relationship work, but what makes a relationship work, there was nothing wrong. She's a phenomenal person, and I'm a good person myself, but why I wanted to change is because there wasn't the passion, and it wasn't because I wasn't willing to do work or she wasn't willing to work. It was because the polarity was not there. Let me explain. To have a relationship work, you have to have enough things in common. If people share enough common values, if they share in common enough things that are most important to them, the same common goals, then a relationship can be deep, it can be a phenomenal friendship, and it can be lasting. Now, in my own relationship, I had things that where our values were even different. We shared a lot of values, but I had some that were directly the opposite. When your values are the opposite, you have to compromise. Now, when both people are constantly compromising, you have a compromised relationship. There's only so much you can compromise and still have a quality relationship. That doesn't mean you're right and they're wrong, or they're right and you're wrong. It just means you value things differently. We all value things differently at different stages of our life. We grow up, we make new distinctions, and we decide what's most important. For some people, adventure is most important. For some people, security is most important. When those people are together, there are going to be conflicts, I can promise you, through time. Maybe not initially, because initially we hide those conflicts because we want a relationship to work no matter what, but they're going to show up. So having enough things in common creates the ability to make a relationship work. It's basically the similarity. It's the sameness. I'll give you another word for it. It's certainty. What makes a relationship passionate is uncertainty. Uncertainty. It's the differences. But it's not differences on values. If you both value, like one of you believes the most important thing in life is to make $1 billion and somebody else's idea the most important in life is to be a couch potato, those are two extremes. There's probably a reality somewhere way beyond there, which is a life that's integrated and balanced and about more than just yourself and more than just business or more than just your kids. It's about all of it, your kids, your intimate relationship, your health, your relationship with God, your ability to contribute to your community. But the point is, if people have differences in those areas, they're going to have long-term challenges, and the relationship will not only be work, it will be one filled with conflict. But it sounds like in this case your relationship probably is similar. You have probably this is a person is a good friend. The rut you're experiencing is you don't have enough polar opposites. You don't have enough opposite energies. And here's what I mean by that briefly. Masculine energy and feminine energy are very different. Just like in order to have electricity, you have to have polar opposites. For your body to function, you know, you have to have electrical opposites. That's what makes the earth function the way it does. That's where energy comes from. If things are the same, there's no energy. There's boredom if things are the same. Now, when I say masculine, feminine energy, I don't mean a man versus woman. I'm not talking like John Gray. I don't believe all men are a certain way or all women are a certain way, nor should they be. There are many men that are very feminine in their energy, and there are many men that are very masculine. And I don't mean you have to be either heterosexual or homosexual to have that be it. There are heterosexual men that are very feminine. There are homosexual men that are very masculine. Vice versa. Women, some are very feminine in their energy, and some are more masculine in their energy. So let me try to give this to you in the shortest version I can. I'm trying to condense what is probably a half-day seminar or a day seminar into an answer for you. Masculine energy is about outcomes. It's about going after something. It's about producing a result. It's about having a vision, a direction, and making something happen. It's about deciding. It's about committing. It's about many of the things that I talked about in these steps. It is not about just flowing and feeling where you are. It's not about meditating. There's nothing wrong with it because we all have both masculine and feminine energy. All of us should have meditative times. All of us should have a chance to connect and flow. It's very different. Think of the fact that masculine energy is producing results, and they're specific and go after it. Feminine energy is more like the ocean. The ocean flows, and it flows everywhere. Sometimes it's stormy. Sometimes it's still. Sometimes it's quiet. It's all over the place. Any man who's ever been with a feminine woman knows what I'm talking about, and that is that a woman's energy can change in an instant, and it has enormous power. Feminine energy is about the full expression of life. It's about color and music and movement and dance. So a feminine woman will move and flow literally without any conscious thought about it when she's in her total femininity, usually when she's around other women where men aren't around to judge. She'll be in a place where colors are beautiful. She's excited about little things. Think of it this way. The masculine energy is about taking big things and making them very small so you can finish, accomplish them, and be free. Feminine energy is about deepening the experience of everything, which is about taking little shit and making it very big, right? And men hate this because they're going, why are they making such a big deal out of this? That's because women are about expressing and feeling emotion. I shouldn't say women, excuse me. Feminine energy is about feeling, expressing all that exists. We have, as I said, both masculine and feminine energy in both of us, but here's what tends to happen. We have a core essence that we're born with in our lives. Some women are born more masculine in their core essence. Some are more feminine. Men, and vice versa, so you get the idea. Here's the core of what I'm describing to you. As women have gotten into the workplace, because a woman can do anything a man can do as well as a man or better, and I'm not just saying that, obviously, to accommodate all the women listening, but it's a fact. It's been proven. So a woman can achieve anything a man can achieve, and women have proven it. But here's the challenge. The challenge is that if a woman enters a business environment, the function of business, if it's going to succeed, is not about let's just flow and go. There has to be a plan. You got to figure out how to execute. You got to make tough decisions. You got to stop doing certain things at a certain moment. It requires a masculine energy. Many women, as they've entered business, can step into that because all women have that masculine energy available, but they don't turn it off, and then they feel unfulfilled later on. Because their whole life is about deadlines and their day timer and crossing things off and making it done and accomplishing things. And they love that for a period of time, but then there's a point where a big part of them feels completely unfulfilled. I deal with millions of people from all around the world. This is not an American thing. This is not a Japanese thing. This is not an Australian thing or a European thing. This is a human thing. Masculine men, similarly, if they don't have a clear purpose, if they don't have a clear direction, if they don't have something they're making decisions about or making happen, they feel impotent. They feel weak, and they will lose the juice from their life. When couples today are both working, both people tend to be masculine at times because they both got to achieve and make things happen. And both times, out of the desire to get out of that masculine energy, both will become feminine. Like very often, men will not make decisions anymore because they don't want to make any more decisions once they get home. And a feminine woman wants a man who will step up and get the job done, not somebody they have to pump up and get there out there and make something happen. And so what's happened in our roles is we no longer have extremes. Now, how do you know if you're more feminine or more masculine? Think of it this way. In any sexual relationship, there's got to be a ravisher and a ravishee. Somebody wants to receive and somebody wants to give. Now, obviously, you may want to change that from time to time, but most masculine men want to aggressively give, fill up, direct, make happen something. And most women who are at their most feminine core want to receive. They want someone who will take control and make that happen. If you're a woman that never wants anybody to take control, and it's not just out of fear and not a learned behavior, but you want to be the aggressor in every case, then you're more masculine in your energy. If you're a man that wants a woman to always be the one who makes the decisions about everything, not just at home but at work, and you want them to guide you and direct you, then you're more feminine in your energy. The opposites are obvious. So, I'm trying to condense into such a short period of time an answer for you that gives you the reality. Here's what I suggest to you. Figure out what you really are and go be that when you get home from work. If your core is to be feminine, you can go kick ass in business all day long and kick every man's butt. But when you get home, go out and turn on some music before you ever get around your man and dance and frolic and spray pretty smelling stuff and put colored stuff on it and do whatever you want to do. Now, if a man is sitting there getting pretty for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 2 hours and trying to fix his hair, he's a bit more feminine. And most women would say that's a little ridiculous. Well, men, at the same time, when you get home, what you got to do is if your boss has been dominating and telling you this is how you got to be and you got to respond, you got to go do something. You got to go work out. You got to do something physical. You got to do something aggressive. You got to do something where you put yourself totally in charge of your life, where you are in control of the direction of your destiny during those moments of time. And then when the two of you come together, there will be totally different energy. The masculine person in the relationship, male or female, will be in a state of ownership, of command, of energy, of decision-making, of making it happen, and the feminine will be in a position of adding all this love, this energy, this flow to that, and there will be sparks between you, and you won't have to worry about planning a date or doing all the inane things that most people teach us to do to try and put the passion back into a relationship. Now, what I recommend to you is, if you're a man and this is your question, I go read a book by a man named David Data, and that book is, he's got a couple of them. For women, there's one called It's a Guy Thing, which will help you to understand the masculine energy and feminine energy. And if you're a man, there's one, probably the best book he's got out there for there would probably be, I'm trying to think, The Way of the Superior Man is probably a great one. And these would give you more answers than I can give you in the short time here, and I want to be able to answer some other questions. But I'm taking so much time on this because I can tell you in my own life, I've suffered at two levels. One, being so committed to making a relationship work because you care about somebody that you have a best friend, but even though you're best friend, you're still compromising what you value most. You've got to know what you value most, what your values are, what your goals are, and if you've not been to date with destiny, you'll find out there for sure. Get yourself in there. But be clear, update yourself, and see what's most important to your partner. You may share things in common and think you don't. That'll help make the relationship work where it's not so effortless. But secondly, you've got to have that polarity. You've got to step into your power. And again, if you're masculine, you've got to take control and make things happen and be the person who's willing to step up and deliver. And if you're more feminine in your energy, whether you be man or woman, you've got to be able to flow and not shut off your energy and let the beauty of who you are, all your emotions flow. Know what seems to be positive, what seems to be negative, because as that energy flows, all of the love will flow through you. Again, think about males looking to accomplish, masculine energy about accomplishing something so you can be free. You know, men want to, you know, cut the touchdown and then let go. And feminine energy is about how can I deepen every experience of life? How can I experience more? How can I connect? How can I fill up with more of the emotion of my life? That's a long answer to a short question, but it's one of the most important lessons of life, and maybe we'll do a session on that alone. We certainly will at Date with Destiny when you come this year. Next question. My finances are completely out of control. I have a good paying job, but I never seem to have enough money. What can I do to change this? You know, it may sound self-serving, but you got to go to Wealth Mastery if you've not already been there. It sounds like you haven't if you have that question. You've got to get a plan, and you've got to more than get a plan. You've got to get the emotions in place that will cause you to be in a place that you'll follow through. Just remember this. Money is two things. It's clarity and it's emotion. You know, 80% of how you turn out financially is really psychology. 20% is mechanics. So at Wealth Mastery, we teach people how to find out exactly what it's going to take for you to be financially independent on your terms. Now, that's different for you than the person sitting next to you, than your friend down the street, because we all have different goals and desires. And we define financial mastery in different levels so that it's truly achievable. But then once you know what it is you want, and then you learn the mechanics of how can I get there? How can I make investments that don't absorb all my time? How can I monitor them so I still have a life? How do I grow things intelligently? How do I not take risks that will destroy me like so many people did in this last market because of their greed? The last piece is the mastery of the emotion. How do I put myself in place so that I don't let my fear shut me down and I don't let my emotions of greed overexcite me and do things that are dumb? And what I'll tell you is, you know, we train this in this area, and we're actually doing training this in the New Life Mastery as well. For those who signed up for it, we set up an entire portion of a day to help you master these emotions. I call them really wealth wounds, the things that cause people not to do what's necessary and to go for what seems like immediate gratification, which, of course, destroys things long term. So my answer to you is this. One, get to Wealth Mastery and get a plan. Two, when the plan is strong enough and compelling enough and simple enough, you'll find yourself being willing to make new decisions. When you have no clear plan and it's not compelling and there's not enough emotion, of course you're going to spend your money no matter how much you make. And then lastly, I'd say you've got to define what are the emotions that make you spend and create a pattern interrupt for those emotions. And the tools for doing that are available in my books without me going through them now so I can make a couple, answer a couple more questions, and they're available in the programs you'll be going through. Next question. I heard that you're changing your seminars next year. What exciting new content can we expect to learn at your events? Well, it's interesting you should say that because I had a five-hour meeting today on the New Life Mastery, which I'm so excited about. What we're doing is we're creating it now so that I'll be doing only 8 primary events a year. I'm doing 4 Unleash the Power Within events, or Revolution events in the United States, and 4 overseas. And in those events, I'm creating a new structure and content. But the big changes are in Mastery University as a whole. Life Mastery now, for those who don't know it, is now being done in a 5.5-day process, 6-day process, and it's done in Fiji at an intimate group of just 60 people, or it's done in Las Vegas, Nevada, in a group of 75 to 100 people at max. And in that program, what I'm doing is taking the best of what I ever did in Life Mastery in the past, but simultaneously, I'm defining it so when you leave, you have a life plan. In other words, you have a menu of the favorite foods that you have, that you love to eat, that you can eat on the run, that'll get you through and you won't cause yourself to go over to a place where you overeat. You have a menu of the most fun things you can do when you're frustrated, bored, or overwhelmed that will immediately make you juiced, an emotional menu. You have a menu of what you're going to do with your financial life and how to deal with the emotions like this man came up with that caused him to overspend or not follow through. You have a menu on what you're going to do so that after this program you'll never have back pain again because you go through a specific analysis. And everything is done on an individual basis for you. You have a menu for things that you can do in your relationship that make it more passionate and that create polarity instead of me trying to answer that question in 15 minutes or 12 minutes. You have a menu of specific things you've tested and tried. So it's kind of like a manual for your life, and you'll have tested these while you're in the program. So I'm extremely excited about what's going to happen for people at the Life Mastery program. I'm running out of time. They're telling me we're about to end the call, so I'll do one more. It says, how might I use these ideas discussed today in my workplace, putting together department goals, being able to adequately communicate this with my staff who have not participated in Mass University or other RRI events? I would say bring in the Trojan horse. Instead of saying Tony Robbins is the way you should do this and having them think you're on drugs and crazy because some guy on TV is doing it, what I would do is this. If you can afford to do this, because we do it at a very inexpensive level now, I don't know what the real cost is, I apologize, but if you call, I know it's extremely inexpensive. We're now doing intimate trainings on how to implement our basically enterprise management program into small and large companies. That is, how do you come along and help people to capture the best out of the year? Because it's interesting you ask this question. My entire executive team, the first week of January, right after the first, we all go to Fiji for a week, for 5 days. And those 5 days, we in essence go through the process we're describing here, but in much more detail. We actually sit down and say, okay, what was great out of this year? Because otherwise, very often, you remember all the challenges. And we take a couple of hours and we capture every great thing that was achieved, accomplished in the year. What was not great in this year? What were the best decisions we made that we want to duplicate? What are the worst decisions we made? What can we learn from those? What can we change? What are the most important decisions we're going to make this year that will change our business and take it to the next level? And who's there are all the department heads, all the division heads, to give you an idea of that particular company. And we walk through a process then of actually planning the next year, having extracted this. And we use a very similar process to what we're doing here. But we can walk you through it in detail by having somebody come and facilitate your organization to do this. If you're interested, just contact Robbins Research by contacting your personal account representative. Last question. I'm out of time. Says, I'm ready to start dating again after being divorced for years. However, I'm finding that my need for independence keeps getting in the way. How do I balance my work, my kids, my alone time, and still find time to nurture a new relationship without pushing him away? And I have 1 minute to answer this question. Well, if you've not been to Life Mastery, you'll be answering that at Life Mastery. I'm also going to take time at Date with Destiny to do it. So if either of those are programs you've not been to, there's new content directly related to that that will give you an answer that is deserving of more than a minute. If I was going to give you a minute answer, I guess my answer would be this. Your need for independence is based on fear. When you say you have a need for independence, what you're really saying is I'm freaked out because I don't want to become interdependent with another person because I don't know if I can trust them. If I trust them, what if I'm disappointed and hurt and I lose the quality of my life? That's part of your question. I tell you this. Fear is imagination that is undirected. Faith is imagination that's directed. Frankly, you don't know if any relationship works or doesn't work. You don't know if this relationship is going to be the best relationship or not. Now, if you come through the new content we're designing, I teach people the most important part of a relationship is selection. When people tell me, oh, my God, relationships are hard work, I say, no, no, if relationships are hard work, there's something wrong. the wrongness is that you either don't have enough values and goals in common, and or you're in a position where you have no polarity. Because if there's enough energy there, it's not hard work, trust me. There's an excitement. There's a juice. It doesn't feel like work. But if you're constantly compromising with somebody else, you're compromising what you want, which frankly many people do, or you're making the other person compromise, you bet it's a lot of work. You say, well, isn't there compromise in a situation, you know, where there are relationships? The answer is yes, but there's a level of threshold, like anything, where if you keep compromising, the relationship is compromised. So what I'd say to you is this. Number one, you're going to have to step back into faith. You're going to have to develop that certainty, even though there's no reason to be certain. You're going to have to imagine the way you want it to be in a relationship, and you're going to have to see it that way, feel it that way, condition it that way, envision it that way, and behave as if the relationship is that way. If you do the opposite, if you operate from the frame of I'll wait and see, then your need for independence, i.e. your fear of being hurt, will cause your fear to constantly overreact to little things. Like you'll see the person, and they'll do something that somebody did in a past relationship. You go, oh, that's, I'm not going to let that happen to me again. There's no way. I'm not going there again. And you'll overreact. And in the overreaction, you will kill the juice of this new relationship. And you're right, you'll never have it. Let me just tell you this. If you have enough juice in your relationship, you will not have any difficulty being able to find time to be able to make your business work, because you'll have juice sharing that with your partner, or be able to work things out with your kids or with your husband or whoever else is in your life. Whenever people have enough energy for something, whenever they have enough excitement about something, they find a way to make it happen. They find a way to fit it in. Your biggest challenge is fear. What I would do is get honest with myself. I would get clear. I go through what I did here with a year with my relationships. I'd say, okay, great. What are the best things that happened in my relationships? Because I promise you, you're not focused on those just by your question. What are all the great things that have ever happened in any relationship you've ever had? I know there have been not good things, too. But you ever notice how, in order to fall in love, you focus on everything that's good about a person or could be great about a person. If you fall out of love, you focus on every damn thing that could ever upset you. So first focus. And frankly, I did this when I ended my relationship, my 13-year relationship. I said, okay, what was great in this relationship? Because I was so focused on what wasn't. And I went through everything that was great, and I really focused on it. Then I wrote what wasn't great. Of course, I initially wrote everything that person did that was terrible, which is complete lying to yourself. So I realized I was doing that and said, okay, what did I do that wasn't great? So then I wrote, what did I learn from this? What will I do differently? So I got all the juice, all the good stuff that made me want to have another relationship. I saw what happened in the relationship from the other side that I didn't like and I didn't want to have happen again. I saw what I did. I had to be honest. I noticed patterns. Patterns like, okay, I kept saying what I felt, but if the person got upset about it, I just didn't say anything. I didn't lie. I just didn't say anything because I didn't want to get in a fight. Well, if you don't have total sharing of what's most important to you, you can't have total intimacy. You can't have total emotion. So you begin to notice that. And then once you come up with that emotional flood of what was good and what you changed, then get certain. Think about relationships that you once truly wanted to have that seemed impossible that became relationships. Now, maybe later on you were certain you didn't want them. I understand that. But you got yourself to create them. How did you create a quality relationship? And then get excited. Define the relationship the way you want it to be. What do you want it to be like? Describe it in detail. Why is a relationship a must for you? Go through the same step. And then what are two actions you're going to take right away to make that happen? And then how are you going to measure that you truly are making progress towards a relationship? You can use these same seven steps to begin to change things in this area as well. They're flagging me down to tell me that our hour is up. I hope that there's some value for you here. And more importantly, I hope that what you'll do is recap those seven master steps of how to turn this new year into a new life. I want to really thank you for this time, because this was going to end our Mastery Coaching Call for today. But make sure, if you want to, download these steps and take some action immediately to create that momentum. This will be available for playback on demand right here on TonyRobbins.com. And our next session, which will be with Harry Dent on where the financial world is going. And by the way, Harry, if you're not aware of it, I interviewed in 1991-92 during the recession. And at that time, he said, when the Dow was, I think at that time, around 3,000, he said it would go to 10,000. Everybody said he was insane, and he explained why. So Harry Dent's going to talk about the great boom ahead on February 12th. So don't miss that session. It'll be a live new session with Harry Dent on where the markets are going, where, how to make the best investments you possibly can. I think you'll find him incredible. Thanks again. Make sure you take good care of yourself during this holiday season. I look forward to seeing you at a seminar soon. And until then, live with passion. God bless. We'll see you soon.